Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we have a discussion with a longtime activist on civil liberties issues. Reverend Barry Lynn is the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. He's leaving that post after 25 years, and he'll be in St. Louis this weekend, where he'll be honored by local chapters of his organization, the Anti-Defamation League, and the National Council of Jewish Women. Barry Lynn joins us now by phone from the Boston area. Reverend Lynn, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Don. Nice to be back.
I'd like to start this a little bit differently than you might have expected, given the death overnight of Hugh Hefner. He was considered by many to be a champion of the First Amendment. Do you see him that way?
Yes, and ironically, I think I may be the only human being who has ever received both a Freedom of Speech Award from the Playboy Foundation and a Medal of Honor for the Freedom to Worship by the Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt Institute up in Hyde Park. I never had a chance to meet Hugh Hefner, but he certainly was a champion of a lot of things, very controversial because of the images of women that he portrayed and whether that was an insensitive way to do it. But he, I think he certainly can be said to be a champion of freedom of speech, and I respected him for that.
He certainly wasn't afraid to take on issues before they became politically correct or current, was he?
No, I mean, he was a strong supporter of contraceptives when they were still illegal, when they were certainly a choice regarding abortion long before Roe versus Wade. And I think that those are the kinds of stands that made him also more unpopular, perhaps, than he could or should have been. But I think he was a defining member of that early generations of effort to make it clear that you can say what you want, you can depict what you want in America, because that's part of what America is all about.
91 years old. He had quite a run, quite a run.
Yes, he did.
Moving on to other things now. What do you make of where we are right now as a country?
Well, I think that, like many people, I had assumed that we would be talking at a time like this about the first woman president of the United States. I think many people were shocked. I certainly was shocked by Donald Trump becoming the president, and I've been appalled by virtually all of his policies and the way in which he seems to want to tear down important institutions in this country that make change possible, that make us a better, a more literate country, and this is very disappointing. Now, I think some of the good news that comes out of his election is an enormous amount of organizing effort on the part of people who are organizing around a vast number of issues. The Women's March was an extraordinary event. Pro-immigration marches all over the country, enormous, and for the first time in history, a march for science in Washington. The idea that people who take science seriously, including plenty of scientists, would come and rally on part of what turned out to be a very rainy Saturday afternoon is an extraordinary piece of evidence that people are not going to take his policies lying down.
However, during the months that he has been president and up to obviously the most recent time, the polarization that has been generated by this whole political process seems to be exactly where it was almost a year ago.
Well, there's certainly a lot of polarization, Don, but I don't think that I think that the side that opposes the basic ideas of Donald Trump I think they're acting in a very responsible way. I don't think that this kind of moral equivalency argument that the president tries to use, well, there are people on the left and people on the right, and there are all their bad actors in each. I think this is overwhelmingly nonsense. I think that the people, unfortunately, that have been loosed on us are the people who have, perhaps in subtle, hidden ways, have been very anti-principles of this country. You know, the Ku Klux Klan, Steve Bannon, Kelly, I used to know her as Fitzpatrick, These are people who are really on the fringes of American life, and I think that they have been energized very much by this election, by the rhetoric of the president, and that that escalates what is perhaps the reality, and the reality that people are they're doing now what they did on election day. A significant percentage of people, more people supported Hillary Clinton than did Donald Trump, but because of the Electoral College, of course, he won the election.
How do you explain the 35%, though? I mean, excluding from that 35% some of the people and organizations that you've just alluded to, how do you explain that the hard rock, steadfast, unwavering 35% that support President Trump?
Well, I think there is this undercurrent of a sense that Hillary Clinton was a terrible person, that is a lot of anti-woman sentiment, even among white women who did, by a slight majority, vote for Donald Trump. I think that there is also a sense that people did not want to think terribly hard about the election. They had very knee-jerk responses. I mean, we went to a number of, shall we say, right-of-center events right before the election, and if anyone mentions the word Benghazi, people would stand up, even if they had no clue what had actually allegedly happened there. And that similarly, Secretary Clinton's emails became an overwhelming distraction. And I do, frankly, blame the media for this. I don't think that the media coverage of the last election was good at all, and at any level. CNN, for example, used to cut away, even in the weeks immediately before the election, to any Donald Trump rally, even though they were not going to see or hear one new idea out of his head. And I think they were enamored with how much attention he got at the very beginning. And, of course, all the networks gave him vast amounts of free time on top of his reality television time. And he became an unstoppable force, unless you did something creative. I didn't like the debates. I didn't think they addressed issues at all. They were mainly about issues of personality, discussions, again, of Secretary Clinton's emails. And, of course, now, ironically, we found out that a large number of people within the orbit of this administration are also using private email servers. About what, we don't know, but the very fact that they're using private ones, the essence of the argument against Secretary Clinton is really ironic and well as terrible.
You know, certainly a lot of people are saying that today. But on this issue of polarization and the media, it would seem to me that the cable in particular played a huge role in this. It plays a huge role in this because you've got the networks that are so dedicated to a particular philosophy. I mean, we've got MSNBC on the liberal side and Fox, of course, on the other side, and CNN somewhere in the middle. They're really contributing to this because people will only go where they're comfortable and don't bother to listen to the views on the other stations.
I think that's right, although I think that there's still a tendency, and I think that you see it maybe most when there's a natural disaster, of which we've had several in the last few weekends. People go to CNN because they do think it is in the middle. But I think the fact that CNN devoted as much time to Donald Trump virtually as Fox News did demonstrated that they were taking him as a serious candidate. And people said, well, if they think he's a serious candidate and we don't like Secretary Clinton, I mean, we might as well give Donald Trump a try. They forgot everything that Donald Trump used to stand for. Religiously speaking, 81% of evangelical voters voted for Donald Trump. It's the highest percentage of evangelical voters who voted for anyone in history. And yet here was a guy who, by their own definition of the religious right, what are the values that matter most? Family values. He violated them on a regular basis, and it didn't seem to matter. I was on MSNBC a couple of weeks ago. somebody said, well, why doesn't he push more of these family values in Congress? And my response was, because he thinks he's going to get away with nominating anyone to the Supreme Court, having those people confirmed, and they will do it for him. There really is a chance, Don, of a major set of pullbacks on voting rights, on abortion rights, on all of the other social issues that matter, as well as perhaps doing more damage to the integrity of the voting system by allowing churches and others to directly nominate, directly support candidates for public office, something that is currently prohibited by law, but which the president says he wants to repeal, replace, and destroy, rather than replace it. He wants to destroy it. We got some big problems.
We're pretty much, with the court, we're pretty much now where we were over the last decade or so. I mean, with Scalia gone and Gorsuch in, it's pretty much the same court. However, it's very possible that President Trump will have at least one more, perhaps in the not-too-distant future.
No, that's certainly true. I mean, the best thing that one can say, perhaps, about the last day of the term is that Justice Kennedy, who still is what I call a common-sense conservative, that is a conservative in a general sense, but without having lost all common sense, a man who does respect the idea that there should be no second-class citizens in this country, of course, wrote an eminently quality, really a brilliant decision on marriage equality to make sure that marriage could occur by people around the country rather than do this on a state-by-state basis, even if they were same-gender couples. And Gorsuch, I think, in some ways, is actually more conservative than Scalia. Scalia, every once in a while, surprised us. He, for example, said that burning the American flag was a form of freedom of speech. I can't believe that Neil Gorsuch would have ever reached that conclusion. And so I think that, and I watched him in those last weeks that he was on the bench, and he's active, not as quite as aggressive in these first few weeks of his tenure as Scalia often was, but surprisingly vocal, incredibly ultra-conservative, and frankly, he seems to think that, like Justice Scalia, that you can find all the answers to constitutional questions by figuring out the original intent of the framers of the Constitution, which is an interesting and largely fictional way to look at the law.
And he'll be there for another 30 years, probably.
Yes, he will. He's 49 years old, and apparently people live for a very long time for when they're serving on the Supreme Court. Okay. And, of course, many of us are happy about that when you look at someone like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has had serious problems with cancer, mm-hmm. but who looks a lot healthier to me in the last few times I've seen her than she did a few years ago. But those voices and this idea that we will have judges that make a difference because they look at the law through a lens not of their own choosing, but a lens based on looking at the principles that generated these constitutional provisions and then apply them to today's reality. That, to me, is how you do constitutional interpretation. But unfortunately, nowadays, anytime anyone is confirmed or anyone is suggested for the Supreme Court, no matter what president does it, it becomes another campaign. It becomes a mini election campaign, and you see ads pro and con, whatever the justice is, all over radio and television. So it may help, the commercial radio and television stations to get more ad revenue, but I don't think it's an appropriate way to select judges for the Supreme Court. And, of course, out of the list of 22 people that then-candidate Donald Trump posed to the country last the summer before he was elected, a lot of these people are have extremely conservative views, at least as conservative as Neil Gorsuch himself.
I have to take a break, Reverend Lynn. Let's do that now. I'm talking to Reverend Barry Lynn, the retiring executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Reverend Barry Lynn. Reverend Lynn, I know you wanted to let folks know a little bit more about what's going on here on Sunday. My impression is that there is a deadline for people who want to attend the event Sunday. Is that the way you understand it?
That is, but I also, just before we went on the air, I did get a note about still taking reservations. And if people want to write to P-R-E-S, as in Prez, at STL, as in St. Louis, AU, AmericansUnited.org, leave a message with your contact, and you'll be contacted later today and can join the festivities that go from 5:30 to 7:30 on Sunday.
And that's at Hillman Hall at Washington University.
Correct.
We'll have all of that information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. So if folks didn't have a chance to write it down, just visit us, and we'll all be there for you. Back to our discussion. It's an interesting debate that is taking place now between the National Football League and our president, isn't it?
No, it certainly is. And, I mean, you'd think that politics had never entered sports before 3 weeks ago. But, of course, it's always been a part of what has happened. Going back to Jesse Owens and lots of people, and when they look at the early integration of Major League Baseball, I mean, these have been big issues. Race has often been a factor, and that's really what's going on here. People are not trying to diss the flag. They're not trying to show disrespect for the military. They're simply trying to make a position known that started with Cohn about police brutality in America. And I think that I've never been sure why we do the national anthem at so many sports stadiums. Whatever it is, the heart of America, to me, is dissent. And this is all that's being demonstrated by the players, by some of the owners, as we look forward. I don't expect this to stop. Donald Trump had the audacity the other day showing how little he understands about the First Amendment, of saying maybe we should make it illegal for people to take a knee at professional football games. He has no power or authority to do that. And if the government were to do that, of course, it would be challenged instantly and overturned instantly by virtually any court that would look at it.
I wonder if there's a greater chance that the change will be affected by all of this because athletes are involved, just as Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay then, made some difference with regard to the Vietnam War. And, of course, you've mentioned some of the others. Now that they're involved, I wonder if this has a better chance than some other methods of trying to affect change in these areas.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that this is a guarantor of change, but I think that whenever people – many of whom started with nothing, all of a sudden I noticed the right-wing commentators saying, well, they make so much money now. Well, then most of these guys did not make a lot of money, neither did their parents or grandparents. They've worked their way up. They've become prominent spokespeople for a lot of issues, as they have every right to be. And if you can be a reality star and become president of the United States, you can certainly be a quarterback and make a political statement about race in America.
In the time we have left, we have a couple of callers who want to get into this conversation.
Sure.
So let's bring them in, and we'll start with Pat, who's calling from St. Louis. Pat, go ahead. You're on the air with Reverend Barry Lynn.
Thanks, Don, Reverend Lynn. A couple quick points, and you guys made some others while I was waiting. I'm just curious, Reverend Lynn refers to Judge Gorsuch as an ultra-conservative. Maybe he can define that as opposed to a hard-right conservative or just a conservative, first of all. Second of all, I really have to take issue. CNN has done nothing but attack President Trump since he's been in office constantly. and they run to Trump like a moth to the flame, but they attack him at the same time. And I would remind both of you that there is no right to free expression in a private football field while you're working on the job. It just isn't there.
Pat, thanks for the call. Reverend Lynn?
Yeah, well, on the question of what is an ultra-conservative, I mean, Neil Gorsuch, on every one of the issues that we've talked about, has this outlook. He believes in this idea of original intent that is not even adopted by every person who would characterize themselves as a conservative. Conservatives shouldn't lose common sense. I think Neil Gorsuch's record on the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals was one where he demonstrated, very sadly, a lack of common sense on issue after issue after issue. On the question of CNN, I think the important thing that CNN did in fact give him so much time, helped to create him as a viable candidate. Yes, they are critical of him now. That's true. But then again, I would say almost any sane person would be critical, at least of some of the things that the president is doing.
And, of course, all of the networks, commercial and otherwise, gave him all that time. They said he was golden. When he was out there, they were making a lot of money. One more call, if we can get Pianki into the conversation. Go ahead, Pianki. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for the call. Surely, according to the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, Congress cannot restrict free speech in a private environment. But the owners themselves can restrict free speech. And I don't understand why the NFL, being that the players are under individual a contract by way of the Sherman Antitrust Act, why come the NFL don't dictate on how those players behave during the national anthem?
Thanks, Bianchi.
Bianchi, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's not just that Congress, we know that the states can't restrict it either because of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution after the Civil War, but there is broad latitude to make definitions about what amount of freedom of speech or freedom of other expression private employers will make. But that, I would think that the owners will not be in a position to do that. I think it would generate an enormous amount of well-placed hostility by viewers, by the players, and I don't think that's going to happen. My point, though, is if Donald Trump were to get more directly involved, he would literally be violating the Constitution by telling private employers what they should tell their players to do.
We only have a moment or two left, but I did want to note the fact that on your website you're paying an awful lot of attention to the Muslim ban.
Absolutely.
Where does that seem to be going in your mind in about a minute, if you could?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's clear that Muslim bans 1, 2, and the latest iteration from last Sunday is designed to stop people from predominantly Muslim countries from entering the United States. It is a ban. The president has called it a ban, not only as a candidate, but also as president. And even during the course of this litigation, we've been actively involved in these issues. We've represented and we continue to represent clients in these cases. A Muslim ban, a pro-Christian, let's make it easier for them to get into the country. This has two fatal religious flaws in every version of this that has come out of this administration.
And now you can look for clients from North Korea and from Venezuela.
That's true. There's almost no immigration, by the way, from North Korea and Venezuela's in the latest provision. It just says certain government officials and their close family members. So it's not the kind of ban that affects many countries in the Middle East. But the argument that we've added a few more countries, at first blush, that sounds good, but then when you look at the details, it's not exactly the same thing.
We've got to stop it right there, Reverend Barry Lynn. I want to thank you so much for being
thank
with us.
Thank you.
Best wishes to you on your retirement. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.